The upcoming Rock Blog will feature limited commercial interruptions, but also unrestricted language and older adult content. Put the kiddies to bed and flip your platters to the B-side for tonight's one song each.
One, hit me baby one more time.
I'm Paquita Trotamundos. Welcome to One Song Each, B-Sides Track. With me is Diablo Frank.
Hi, how you doing? I'll be joining the various guests on this episode.
The station with the best music. Best music.
I love the music.
Best music.
Next up is Jay, FKA Jason Jones of the Silver and Gold Podcast Network.
We've done several episodes of One Song Each, and so far it's just been me and my buddies. The conceit I came up with is that those would be the A-sides, and then the B-sides are going to be recordings like this, where I'm recording with one individual, they're doing their song, but they're somewhat in isolation, because aside from using me as a sounding board, they're not in the group setting, and so you've got a number of singles mixed together, rather than there's more of an album quality to the other show, because we're having a conversation, and our discussion of one song will overlap to the other song and stuff. So what I think I would be cool is if you actually like called in the request, like if you're calling into a radio station, it's like, hey, I'm Jay Jones and I'd like to request such and such. You think you could do that?
Okay. All right, so you're Delilah then, right? Do you know who Delilah is? It's a syndicated radio show for romance purposes. She plays romance songs and she tries to get people to connect and shit. And they play her down here. It's all over the country. But if you know her, you know her. If you don't, you don't. And if you like her, she's awesome. But most people I know hate her. So okay. So you're Casey Kasem then. You know who that is, right?
Yeah, I know Casey Kasem.
All right.
We just talked about in the previous episode of the show how his wife kidnapped him and ran all around the country with him and stuff.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we go to dark places, you know.
Okay, so
you seem to be struggling with the conceit.
I'm not sure I can do this. I'm not sure this is something I can
draw up into you.
Well, I can't believe I picked this song. It's so personal.
Okay. And the thing is, too, is if you just want me to cut all that, I can cut it. It's up to you. I don't want you to put anything out there that you're not comfortable with. As long as you've told me before it is actually out there, I'll pull it. Don't even sweat that.
Well, I don't think that there's anything that I feel uncomfortable with. And while I like the idea that you're proposing, I think it would somehow cheapen the song, if that makes sense.
You've got your song picked, so if you want to just kind of go right into it, you can.
Okay. The song that I picked was The Luckiest by Ben Folds. It was on his Rockin' the Suburbs album, which was his first solo endeavor. I did not do any research, so I have the internet right here, so let's see what it has to tell me about Rockin' the Suburbs. Came out in 2001. Are you familiar with Ben Folds at all?
Yeah, I like the, I don't remember the name, is the album called Whatever and Ever Amen?
Yes. No.
Yeah, I enjoyed that album.
I think it is.
I have a copy of that album. I really like that particular song, actually, and I liked Song for the Dumped.
Give me my money back.
Yes.
I like the one about one angry dwarf and something other. Anyway, I enjoy that album. But obviously, I'm not like a huge fan because I can't name any of the freaking songs. But I enjoyed that album, but I didn't really follow him after he went solo.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of his best stuff came when he went solo, but my friends would probably tend to disagree with me on that point. So this came out 2001. It was his first solo album, and the title track had a really crazy video that was directed by Weird Al Yankovic, which is kind of fun.
I'm rocking the suburbs, just like Michael Jackson did. I'm rocking the suburbs, you said that he was talented. I'm rocking the suburbs, I take the checks and face the facts. The sub producer with computers fixes all my tracks.
But this song is important to me because it's me and my wife's song. When I was first talking to her, I met her on the internet. When I was wooing her on the internet, this song came out and I said, you know, this is me singing to you. This is how I feel about you. This is could very well just be something that I wrote. And she thought that was sweet. So it sort of became our song. Do you, when you do this, I know I haven't listened to your show and that's horrible, but when you do, do you play the song itself?
I usually play about a minute long excerpt from the song.
Yeah, since you don't want to get sued or anything, right?
I try to minimize that aspect. Plus, if you break for a full-length song, especially depending on the length of the song, it can really mess with the flow. Where if you keep it at around a minute or so, then you're back to talking to people and people don't lose the show to the music. You get enough of the music to where you get the core. In most songs, really, a minute will give you a good chunk of what the song's about, so it tends to work out okay.
Right.
I don't get many things right the first time. In fact, I am told that a lot. Now I know all the wrong turns, the stumbles and falls brought me here.
This is a super sweet song. It's a super sentimental song. I believe he wrote it for his wife at the time, Fraley, but I couldn't say for sure. Ben Folds is the kind of guy who's been married a bit. I don't really know much about his private life, but he does seem to not have his shit together in that respect. But it's a very sweet song about a guy who basically is a bit of a loser and knows he's a loser and everybody tells him he's a loser. But then he meets this woman and, love his life, and he's the luckiest because he has her. Why don't you ask me some questions or something? Give me a direction. I'm not sure what I should be saying at this point.
There isn't a cut and dry, this is what you have to do. It's you say what you want to say about the song. Okay. I can interject with some stuff, like some factoids I picked up because I did a little research when you told me what song you wanted to do. But there's no prescribed link. There's no prescribed content. It's what you want to say about the song. Again, you talked about other stuff that Ben Folds have done. Sometimes we talk about the artist's career overall. Sometimes we talk about a particular album. It isn't super defined. It's basically what you want to say and the length of time you want to say it.
Okay. Well, here's what I want to say then. This song defined my marriage to my wife. After we'd been married a few years, she gave me a new wedding band that was engraved. Inside of it, it says, I am the luckiest. And that's what we used to always say to each other, that, you know, I was lucky to have her. And she's like, no, I'm the luckiest because I have you. I haven't really spoken about this aspect of my own personal life publicly so much. I love her immensely, but we're not together anymore. some stuff happened, and she is gone. And so now this song is extra bittersweet for me because I still feel that way. I still feel the luckiest. I still love her. And I know that she still loves me in a sense, but the original magic is not there anymore. And, you know, she did what she had to do for herself. And now this song, although it is my favorite Ben Folds song of all time and always will be, kind of bums me out when I hear it. So I really could have picked any song, but I went with the one that hurts the most from him. He's like my favorite artist, most likely. I'd say it's a tie between him and REM. I don't know what else to say about it, honestly. I love the song. I love the way it sounds. I love the way he sings it. I have seen him perform it live several times, and I cannot help but sing along with him when he does. And once when he was performing it live, I saw, as I was singing it along with him, I saw backstage his wife, who he wrote the song for, making eye contact with me, and I felt really, really weird. And because I'm sitting there looking at her, singing her song to her that her husband wrote for her, and then they got divorced soon after that. So I got to figure it was because she fell in love with me. And that's really awkward. So, you know, it is what it is.
This whole contribution to the podcast is a misconnection. You're trying to get with Ben Folds X is what's happening here.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I did put some ads in, you know, like I put some stuff on Craigslist, but, you know. I think she's a fashion model or something. So we don't really travel in the same circles. You know what? I don't know what she is. I think she's an artist. Did I say fashion model? She's a fashion model artist. She's an actress. I have no idea. I just know I made eye contact with her and sang her song to her, and it was a weird moment.
International Playgirl Woman of Mystery. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's her. Her name is Fraley. I remember that. Fraley Hines. So, you know, Google that.
I don't know how to spell that.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I will say, because I did do a little bit of research, what I'll point out is that while the song may have been addressed to his wife, he'd actually written it specifically for a movie that never came out. I think it did come out, but they dropped the song for some reason. And so the song was sitting around for a while, and then it got released on the album, which apparently came out around the same time as 9/11. So I was thinking, oh, wow, that must have been terrible for the album, but apparently this was like one of his biggest hits. I'd never heard it before you mentioned it to me, and I listened to it on the YouTubes, and it's achingly sweet. I'm certain that this is a song that has launched many hundreds of weddings. You do get that sound of that commitment, that sense of this is a person that's willing to put up with me and is awesome, and I don't believe that I've managed to sucker them so long. So I definitely got that from the song. But apparently it got used a few years back for the movie In Time, and that apparently gave it a whole new life. Ben Folds had talked about how he'll make a song and disregard it afterward. He did the song, he put it on an album, he's done with it. And what he loves is when the music comes back to him, when it's recontextualized. It was used repeatedly in the movie, and he just fell in love with the song from how it was used in the movie and how it made the song real for him, where for him it was just a song that he wrote, so he didn't have the esteem for it that perhaps other people had who'd heard it and appreciated it, but he could finally see it through their eyes because another artist had processed it through their work and made it real for him. And so now he really loves the song, and he especially loves how he was employed.
All right. Well, you certainly did your homework. Awesome. I just like the way it sounds. It's sweet and sentimental and kind of contrived, I guess, even. But the way that he describes himself, the way that he describes, like he talks about, he's trying to make a point about this woman, this man who died, his wife died, and then he died right after. They've been married for like 80 years. And, you know, you get the point that he's trying to make, but he's not really making it very well, but you know where he's going, and that's enough. And that's kind of me, you know, to a T. You know where I'm going with something, but I don't always articulate the way that makes sense, but you get it. Yeah, it's kind of like what I'm doing right now.
You intuit it because the connective tissue isn't necessarily there, but enough pieces are there. You connect everything in your mind. So yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then that's what's happening in the song too, as you said.
Right. Yeah. And it's and I love it. And it always will be probably my favorite song by him. And he's, like I said, one of my favorite artists, and one of the only ones that I have seen live multiple times. And I think I haven't really gone to a lot of shows in my life, but I've gone to maybe 4 Ben Folds shows, 2 They Might Be Giant shows, and that's about it, if you discount local music. So, you know, I don't get out much, but he's one of the ones that I have seen probably the most on stage, and puts on a good show, puts on a great show, actually. So there you go.
Finest ingredients aged for flavor. That's Lucky Lager. Flavor that's entertaining, enthusiastic, a very exciting beer.
Lucky beer, premium beer, Lucky premium beer.
Batman. And Booster Gold, hero from the 25th century.
Hello, my name is Jay. Some of you know me as FKA Jason, or the Captain Atom guy, or even the Wild Dog guy. I'm all of those and less. I am also a geek. Wait, can I use that word? Let me start again.
Captain Nathaniel Adams.
General Eiling, sir. What brings you... What's this?
Orders. Your commission has been reactivated. You're back in the Air Force.
I'm committed to the Justice League now, sir.
Hi, I'm Jay, and I like comics. I podcast about them, and I've roped my friends into helping me. I have 6 shows I want to tell you about. Silver and Gold Podcast is a show I do with my buddy Roy. We talk about DC Comics, Captain Atom, and Booster Gold. On Beatlemania, my pal Tim and I talk about Blue Beetle.
I'm Ted Kord, the Blue Beetle.
On Charlton Comics Throwback, I ramble on about the Silver Age Captain Atom and other wonderful Charlton books with my son Vance. I'm also host of Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast. That's the one where I gush about DC's bad boy, Wild Dog.
Rene Ramirez, you need to decide if you want to be a man in a hockey mask or if you want to be someone else. Something else.
But those aren't the only shows we put out. Roy's DC v. Marvel pits a randomly selected DC character against a randomly selected Marvel character, and they fight to the death. And on Scarab and Cinema, Tim Wallace talks about his favorite movies. All of these shows come out whenever we feel like it, and can be found at sngpod.com, on iTunes, Shout Engine, and Stitcher. Just search for SNG Productions. Stay gold. Keep it blue, throw it back, and never let sleeping dogs lie with us at the SNG Pod family of podcasts. You might find something to appeal to the geek in you.
Friends, it's certainly true that when you smoke, you want smoothness, mildness, and deep down enjoyment. And that's precisely what you'll get with every Lucky Strike you light, because there's never a rough puff in a Lucky. Just think of that, friends. Luckies are always smooth, mild, and mellow every puff of the way. For you see, it takes fine tobacco to make a fine cigarette, and LSMFT, Lucky Strike, means fine tobacco. Now, fine tobacco costs more, and Luckies pay more. That's right. Luckies pay millions of dollars more than official parity prices to get ripe, mellow tobacco for your Lucky Strike. Just listen for a moment to what the tobacco experts say about the kind of leaf Lucky Strike buys. Take Mr. L. Garland Griffin, a tobacco auctioneer from Clarksville, Virginia, who recently said, "All in all, I've sold over 100 million pounds of tobacco. And season after season, I've seen Lucky Strike buy fine tobacco. Prime, ripe leaf. The kind of tobacco for downright good smoking. I've smoked Lucky's regularly for 14 years. Now there's a tip for you, friends, from a man who really knows tobacco. So for your own deep-down smoking enjoyment, light up a Lucky. You'll agree with the tobacco experts, with the millions who choose Lucky's for a finer, milder, smoother smoke. Yes, puff after puff, pack after pack. There's never a rough puff in a Lucky.
Every once in a while, we just have to say it.
Focus.
That's what I was thinking. Focus. Whatever.
1027 WEBN.
Up next is Old Dude from the upcoming show, Bonding Agents, the father and son Spy-Fi podcast.
So we're just going to pick a song and talk about it?
Yeah, mostly you.
All right, well, when you brought this up last night, I was listening to one of your other podcasts. And it seemed to me we were talking about dreary love songs. Rather than talk about dreary love songs, although I'm sure somebody could find drama in any true love song, I want to talk about what I think is the greatest American love song. And there are a bunch of great ones. Don't get me wrong. We were talking about them last night, but you said I got to talk about one song. So we're going to talk about one song, and that would be the Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody.
Thank you.
it's got everything a love song is supposed to have. I mean, this guy's heart is just pouring out. Personally, I never could figure out why they called it Unchained Melody, but there are some cases where, you know, because it really doesn't go with the song. It's more of a descriptive, just what I'm talking about. All of his love, all of his emotion is unchained and just bursting from him. But the title, Unchained Melody, has absolutely nothing to do with the song outside of describing it.
Well, it's funny because I always figured they got the name Unchained Melody because it doesn't have as formal of a structure as a lot of other pop songs. I mean, it does have a chorus, but it just kind of seems like it's sort of free-flowing to some degree. But it turns out the reason why it's called that, it's a 1955 song with music by Alex North and lyrics by Hi Zarrett. North used the music as a theme for the little-known prison movie Unchained, hence the song title. So that's where that came from. It's from a soundtrack.
This is Steve Davitt, convicted of a felony in the state of California. His destination, Pomona Alley. This is the largest honor prison in the world. 2,000 men live here. Murderers, armed robbers, forgers, safecrackers, petty thieves. But there are no guns to hold them, no walls, no armed guards. Just a man and an idea. A man named Scudder. The idea that prisoner people. This is their story, photographed entirely at Chino, as it happened.
Oh, my Lord. I've hungered for your touch a long, lonely time. Time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much. Are you still mine? I need your love. Godspeed your love.
And see, I've never seen that movie, but I grew up with that song. I mean, they revised it in the 60s and revised it again in the 70s. And unlike a lot of artists, they didn't go back and they just re-released the song as was. And let's face it, if a song can be a hit three different decades, there's got to be something to it.
Yeah, and it's been covered like crazy. According to Wikipedia, it's been covered by 670 different artists in
multiple languages.
And then multiple versions of the same song managed to chart in the UK charts. The only other time that ever happened was Do They Know It's Christmas? Are the only songs that reached number one in four different recordings in the UK. Of the hundreds of recordings available, it was a July 1965 version by the Righteous Brothers, performed as a solo by Bobby Hatfield, that became a jukebox standard in the late 20th century. The version achieved a second round of great popularity when it was featured in the film Ghost, 1990. In 2004, it finished at number 27 on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Songs survey of top tunes in American cinema.
Well, and you have artists still covering it.
Oh, yeah, it's an incredible song.
The truth is, I've got, in my collection, I think I have four versions of it. I kind of like all of them, but nobody, as far as I've ever heard, because I've heard hundreds of versions of it, nobody did it the justice the Righteous Brothers did. The two brothers singing both high and lows.
Well, and apparently, was it both the brothers? Because I think we were just reading that it's only one of them who's showing that vocal range, those vocal histrionics of that song. Because while that's a song I love to sing in the shower, I sure can't do it anything like it's due because who has that vocal range?
There's a number of people I know of with that vocal range, but it's just the way they did it. It did get revised when the Ghost movie or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I was familiar with the song before then, but yeah, I think it was like an actual like top 40 hit again. And because
yeah, they brought them back. They had that other album. That came.
Yeah, that's right. They actually had a comeback as new viable recording artists, mm-hmm. too.
No, I never felt this way before.
Never felt
yes,
this
I swear. Way. It's the truth. And I
Also, Bill Medley had done Dirty Dancing, I think, about a year or so before that, about 2 years before that, and that helped put him back on the map, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have a lot of, unless you wanted to dissect the song, and I really don't see why, because it's not so much the words of the song, but how they're presented. And the range is one of the things. You get crooning and you get the blues. The guy is having the blues, not because it's a lost love, but because he is separated from his love. Even a separation from across the street is just too much for this guy to take.
Apparently there's even an up-tempo doo-wop version by Vito and the Salutations mm-hmm. that made it to number 66 on the Billboard and was used in Goodfellas, same year as Ghost. Come on, pretty baby, one more time. If I feel time, wait for me, I'll be coming on, my baby. Yeah, be coming on, yeah, the moon and sea.
And I may have that version. I'm not sure, but I may have that version.
Okay, the first one to chart was by band leader Les Baxter. That was in 55. It made it number one and was the number five song of 1955.
Unchain me, unchain me, unchain me. I need your love. I need your love. Godspeed your love to me.
Al Hibbler did a version that made it to number three.
Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch. Long, long time.
Jimmy Young did a version that made it to number one in the British charts.
Time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much. Are you still mine?
It's just one after another, but the Righteous Brothers is the one that really seems to stick.
Well, you do know that a lot of the British stuff did not make it over here, even after the British invasion. The tolerance of Americans can be pretty narrow. The Beatles, the Stones, you had Lulu, you know, even Twiggy got her shot, you know. There has to be a certain homogenous something to it to make it, or especially in those days, to make it.
The way it worked is that Bobby Hatfield and Bill Medley both wanted to record Unchained Melody. And on each one of their albums, they would get to do one solo track. And basically it came down to a coin toss, which Bobby Hatfield won. But it wasn't actually supposed to be a single. It was the B-side to the single Hung On You.
Baby, why?
Which is a follow-up to Just Once in My Life.
And baby, baby, once in my life, let me get what I want, girl, don't let me die.
Radio DJs didn't like Hung On You, and they just started playing the B-side. Producer Phil Spector got so mad about it that he was actually calling radio stations trying to make them stop playing Unchained Melody. Ultimately, the song made it to number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 14 in the UK. So it didn't even rank as high as a lot of the other versions of it, but that's the one that everybody remembers.
Well, to begin with, if Phil Spector really did do that, which makes no sense. Producers, they get it in their head, you know, the whole idea of a producer or an A&R guy is they know what a hit is. And if they want to promote some other song as a hit, I can see where, you know, they think some other song is a hit. But if Spector was producing the whole album, it doesn't make any sense for him to get bent about a flip side or whatever. I mean, the whole idea of the music business is to make money. It's not, I mean, the artist might think it's art or want to think of themselves as artists. But the truth is, it's about making money and making as much money as you can make. So if you can have a hit, it don't really matter whether it's on the flip side or not.
What I'm seeing in the wiki entry is that the song was actually produced by Bill Medley. What had happened was that Phil Spector had a production credit for the album, but he didn't want to bother with the time and expense of producing each song, especially anything that wouldn't be a single. So you didn't start seeing Spector get a producer credit until after Unchained Melody became such a big hit, but that would have been one of the reasons why he might have been upset, is because he may have had some degree of authorship for the production on what he thought was going to be the hit single, and when it wasn't the case, he still wanted the credit. Oh, no. But Bill Medley produced that one major change that was made to the Righteous Brothers version is they put the line about "I need your love" at the end of the song as the climax and did it as a high note, which wasn't what was done in the previous versions. And in fact, Hadfield wasn't really happy with that version, and he said, "Let me take, do another take, I can do it better." And Medley simply replied, "No, you can't." He'd also played the World Lesser Piano in the song and notes that if I knew that it was going to be a hit, I certainly would have brought in a better piano player than himself. So you're right, it wasn't a Spector song, but Spector got to take claim credit for it, apparently.
You know, sometimes the story is more important than the credit. I can tell you that artists and writers and producers, the story, in fact, it's even made it in that movie Wag the Dog. It's all about the story. I mean... And in the real business, that's the truth. Sometimes the story's more important than the money. If it's a story you can tell at a party to your other artist friends, and producer friends, whatever, that's what makes it worthwhile. But that is internet, and it is wiki, and that doesn't mean all that is...
Oh, yeah, it's just a quick reference. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Fantastic song, fantastic recording, specifically by the Righteous Brothers. Definitely one of the all-time great romantic songs. But does it have any personal impact on your life, though, or just the simple fact of enjoying listening to it so much?
No, except when it comes on, it gives me joy.
Absolutely. Do you sing along?
Yeah, some of it, because I know I can't... And of course, with my voice, you know, I'm flat. I have my moments, but I'm flat. I'm certainly better than your grandfather. Your grandfather just sucked.
The Mad Cow Disease of Sacramento Radio Stations. Rio Rock.
It's making me insane!
93 Rock.
In every Chevrolet showroom across America, more and more people are looking at the car that's just out and just wonderful. The 1957 Chevrolet. Some are looking at Chevrolet's daring new front-end styling, the bold new grille, big, beautiful sloping hood. Some are looking at Chevy's handsome new rear end with high fashion fenders and fresh new design. Everyone's enthused about the new color-fashioned interiors and the sleek command post instrument panel. And the biggest news of all, Chevrolet's fuel injection, the greatest engine advance since the overhead valve. Plus, four famous drives topped by new exclusive Turbo Glide that brings you triple turbine takeoff and a new flowing kind of going. So visit your Chevrolet dealer soon. See the car that goes them all one better. Number one in the USA, the 57 Chevrolet.
My own father dressed like they did in I Spy. He had a skinny belt and a skinny tie.
In 2018.
Oh, we believe the secret agents had all that stuff, man. And some of that stuff did exist. The scopes on the guns in Man from U.N.C.L.E. They were supposed to be infrared scopes, and they were.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
My son comes over with his microphone and a digital board and computer, and he wants to bond over things, and since we both watch films, that's what we bond over. Started out to be over James Bond, but he heard somebody else was doing that. So we're bonding over any kind of spy. Secret Agent Man, Wild Wild West. The Avengers was on American TV, but it didn't go over. It's not really something I think most Americans could understand. British invasion may have begun, but America had to catch up to the humor of it.
Bonding Agents, the father and son spy-fi podcast.
Spy-fi?
Your asset.
Old dude.
Yeah, Lou Frank.
And the program's about whatever he tells me it is. Spies and science fiction all rolled up into one.
Available through Shout Engine and the Internet Archive, through iTunes, and similar podcatchers.
The most provocative part of our man Flint is the fact that he lives with like five women. That is what would bend people. Anybody watching the movie at that time would be going, oh, whoa.
Bonding Agents is a Raw Spine podcast.
Reality is, Christmas shopping can make everybody feel a little anxious. But Mark's Work Warehouse has what it takes to relax. Denver Hayes colored denim jeans with a new relaxed fit for men and women. They're made of 100% brushed cotton, so they feel as good as they look. Guaranteed your money back. For $39.95, you can feel real good about giving Denver Hayes colored denim jeans to anybody in your Christmas list, including yourself. Just relax and go to Mark's for clothes that work.
Songs in a row on Power 92.
What song do you have for us today, Paquita?
Man, it's such a cliche at this point, and I feel really bad about doing this song as my first song because lately, thanks to Donald J. Trump, this weird situation where he really likes this song, and when I heard that, this is the second time he actually ruined two of my favorite things. When I read that he likes steak with ketchup, it's like, no! And then later on, Frank, we were having dinner, and then he just came out with this, do you know that one of the Trump's favorite song is the one that I'm going to feature? And I was like...
Well, it's not just that. I don't even know if it was necessarily me. Not only is the song, to my knowledge, Trump's favorite song, but an episode of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver pointed out that historically a lot of assholes have liked this particular song and taken it as their theme song.
Yeah, that really depressed me as it is. I've been depressed for almost a year now since he took office. So when I heard that, it's like, oh, shit.
Well, you're a woman. You're going to take it back. You're going to redeem this song. There's nothing wrong with the song itself. It's just that the people who like it are often assholes. But you're going to tell us a story that's going to turn this thing around.
First of all, I grew up in a poor family with not that much money, not too much means. And since long, long, long time ago, I probably started this itch in my life around when I was like 11 or 12. I used to like Greek mythology a lot. It was one of my favorite type of readings. And, you know, when you're a kid, you start reading like the actual, not comic type Greek mythology, but more like a kids friendly because...
Children's simplified adaptations of the myth that you get from like scholastic books and stuff, right?
That yeah, kind of it's more like less violent, less orgy type of deal, you know, like something. When I was little, my mom used to, well, but still, she reads a lot. 2 or 3 books a week, devours books. So every summer when we used to come here, Houston, pretty much we spent all the time in the library because it was like we didn't speak English and we didn't have any friends. We were kind of like foreign to this Houston area, especially during the vacation time. It's like, well, you're supposed to be on your vacation. You're supposed to be with friends. But no, we spent here in Houston and my mom pretty much, the only outing for us was the libraries. That's when I started reading about Greek mythology and other types of mythology. So I was always really interested in that. And I was always interested like in that part of the history as well. So around 10, 11, 12 years old, I started developing this, I want to travel the world. And the first place that I want to go to is Greece because of this Greek mythology and all this temples and ancient places, a very shining light on my soul. On my mom's side of the family, pretty much all my cousins, they're all college graduates. They're all STEM field like me, so that's on my mom's side. I finally managed to save enough money because I'm the type of person that wants to pay for my own. I don't want to have credits. I don't want to pay.
You want to pay as you go. You don't want to owe anybody anything.
Yes, exactly. I want to make sure that I go to this trip and go knowing that I'm not going to come back to like a death, and I'm not going to come back to try to eat on beans and toast because I don't have any money because I have to pay for this trip plus the interest and all the stuff. And of course, like this is the first time that I'm actually leaving to an unknown place. And at that time, I didn't travel because, you know, like I mentioned again, I'm come from a poor poor family who didn't took their kids to any special vacation or anything. So it was just my hometown, Houston in the summers, and that was it. I didn't make any special trips. And maybe that's why it kind of come into my brain that I want to see the world. I want to see this gigantic place that we lived in, that there's a lot of different cultures and different societies and all these amazing places, because I was never able to do that. And I bought a plane ticket, and I'll be kind of, I'm always being kind of like a solo type of person, like a very shy solo type of person. So when I planned my trip, it was just me, and I got this backpack, amazing backpack that I still have it, and I'm still gonna have it almost for the rest of my life, because as my travels, I use the same backpack. I was so excited. And funny anecdote, when I was leaving to Greece, I took a plane from Houston to Paris, and then Paris to Athens. Well, when I took the plane to Houston to Paris, I was excited, I was nervous, I was afraid. Here I am traveling almost to the other side of the world, to like a place where it's not the same alphabet, it's not the same language, and I didn't learn Greek in the midtime of my planning stages. So when I was flying, you know, it's like around 8 or 9 hours of flight between Houston and Paris. So I finally got there, and throughout the whole plane, I'm like, started to freak out. Started to like, oh my God, what the effing am I doing?
You can curse on this show.
Okay, what the fuck am I doing? For the first time in a place that I've never been, I don't know absolutely nobody, and I started to get like really nervous, and I started to get like a panic attack, very emotional, like not crying emotional, but it's like I started making my hypochondriac flare up. And this was in the winter, so it was really cold. Oh no, I'm getting sick now, I'm having a temperature, my throat start hurting, and I start coughing, and I think I have pneumonia, and like the whole plane, 8 hours, I start like going crazy in my brain that I'm gonna die in Athens and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, I was like really, really anxious, really, really scared. And an hour before landing into Paris, I was pretty much formulating my whole escape route. You know, I'm like, I'm just gonna go to Paris, and I'm gonna buy a ticket to go back to Houston, and that's it. Because I need to go to the hospital, I need to go to the doctor, and I just can do this. So as soon as I landed, the first thing that I did is call my mom. You know, I'm like, Mom, I think I'm sick, and I have pneumonia, and I'm just gonna buy a ticket, and I'm just gonna fly back. And then my mom just like, stop there. Paquita, get into that plane and fly to Athens. You're not sick, you're not gonna die, so just get into the next plane, and you call me when you get to Athens. I'm like, no, Mom, I mean, yeah, I'm really sick, I need to come back. And she's like, no, get into the next plane. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna calm myself, and I'm gonna get to the next plane, and if I get to Athens and I start feeling kind of still the same way, then it's like, okay, then I'm gonna fly buy a ticket from Athens, and then I'm gonna go back to Houston. So I got to Athens, and from the taxi from the airport to the hotel, I started seeing like Athens, right? Well, my pneumonia just cured, right? I was like, oh, wait, I don't feel that bad. I still have a light, slight cough, but it's because it's January and here it's like super cold. So I think I will survive. So I decided to stay. I don't remember the town that I was in, but I was in one of those hotels, and I went out to have dinner, and it was this family, I think it was an American family, and you know, they saw me that I was alone, and they told me, yeah, do you want to join us? They have like this husband, wife, daughter, I think she might be like around 16, 17 years old. So I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I'm kind of like a very shy individual, but it's like, well, you're in a different place, right? You're not gonna be like, yeah, I'm not gonna deny people talking to me and stuff. I go to the table, and the first thing they started asking is that what I was coming from, if I like to travel a lot. And I say, yes, I love to travel, but this is my first trip ever, and I'm having a good time. So the dad is starting telling about how they travel like at least 2 or 3 times a year. Pretty much in every vacation, they go just travel for pleasure. And you can tell that this family had money, right? Because, you know, they're paying for all those plane tickets and stuff like that. We've been to Paris, went to Germany, we've been to London, we've been to this place, to India. And I'm just thinking, like, man, I would like to go to all those places. And then the girl starts like, oh yeah, my favorite place is this place. And I know my passport number by heart. When I renew it again, it's going to be like start all over again, collecting all those visas and all the stamps and stuff like that. So they were starting to talk about pretty much all the places that they've been. And you can see that it was like a very tight family, like a very happy family. And so they were just, oh yeah, yeah, I recommend you go into this and I recommend you go into that place. And with all that talk, I started to feel kind of sad. You know, kind of like depressed. It's not for them. It's just that I started to realize it's like, this is my first trouble. And this is kind of like a late start. You know, you see this girl, 16, 17 years old, and it's pretty much she's been all over the world. Why I didn't have enough money to actually do stuff like that. And why I never go into my whole family vacations, or like the difficulty within my family itself, because it wasn't like easy family life. So I started getting like really sad and realizing, oh wow, I mean, my life really sucks. And so I started feeling kind of sad and say, well, I'm 26 years old. Yeah, I came here to Greece, but this is the only place that I've been. And I don't know if I'm going to go to some place again. And I don't know how this is going to work out. By the time that it would take me to travel to more places, I mean, it took me all these years to save enough money to go to Greece. So how long it will be for the next time that I have to travel. So I started getting like in my head. So I say goodbye to the family. So I went to my room and I'm still like super depressed, and I'm just kind of like staring down into the window, because it was a beautiful room. It was on the first floor, a very nice window that you can see like a lot of trees and stuff. It was January, so it was raining. It was beautiful. So I started looking on the outside of the window and I started getting like really, really depressed, like really sad. And I didn't cry, but I was close to crying. It's like, well, you know, my life sucks. Kind of sucks, you know? So in the midst of all that depression and sadness, I started hearing like something in the background, in the room itself. I started listening to this song, you know, kind of like the, I couldn't understand exactly what the song was saying, and I couldn't actually hear the actual song. I just knew that it was a song, and I started to kind of go like, what is that? And I started kind of hearing more intently and trying to figure out where the noise is coming from. And I was just listening in the song, and it started going like louder and louder and louder. And I started listening to the actual lyrics. And the song that I'm talking about is My Way from Frank Sinatra.
Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was dark,
the time that I actually listened to more closely, it was in the part where it says, I planned each uncharted course, each careful step along the byway. And more,
byway.
Byway, yeah. and more, much more than this. I did it my way. And I started going like, huh, that sounds kind of pretty cool. And so I started listening to the whole song. By the time that the song ended, I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty fit song for what I'm feeling right now. And I started thinking about, yeah, I mean, this family travels a lot and they're happy. And then you have this 16, 17 year old girl that has been all over the place, but she's done it because of her parents took her. Unfortunately, my parents didn't took me to no place, but I did it my way. Every step I took within my life when I decided that I want to travel is to find a way to make that happen. Going to school, getting into a good job, and trying really hard to find a job that can pay me enough to actually pay for vacations that I want to take. I mean, it took me a long time to achieve that, to travel around the world, something that I always wanted to do. And to achieve my goal, I have to actually start from scratch and work my way up and trying to earn it my way. So I took that song into anthem for me. When I hear that song, I started remember not only Greece, but also what it takes sometimes to actually achieve something that it can lead me to my goals in life. I mean, that's not my only goal in life, but it's one of the most important ones. And so since then, I travel to all the places. Once or twice a year, I try to go someplace. And I will say that it's because of that song, too. It kind of made me feel that, yeah, it's never too late because you are doing it your own way. You don't owe nothing to nobody. I took a lot of sacrifices being away from my family. I was so sad, and the song started to raise the volume, and exactly to that song that it was describing a little bit of what I was going through in life, I always thought like, wow, what a coincidence, right? I
mean, what a coincidence, yeah.
Yeah, what a coincidence. And before that, I have to say that I'm kind of like a little ignorant with music. It's not that I'm ignorant, but I have my own way of liking songs. I have my favorite artists, handful of them, and the rest of the songs that I like is because it put me in the right headspace, or it's just it sounds good, the lyrics are good, or something relates to something of my previous experiences. So that's how I find songs that I like. If you look at my playlist, so it's pretty much like all over the place. I can like something from heavy metal, something going to like really mariachi music. I like world music too. So it's just to put me in that headspace. So this is one of the songs. So when I heard the song, I never heard it before, you know, because I'm not gonna be listening to Frank Sinatra, you know, because I was more like a rock person when I was growing up. So I never actually knew about this song beforehand. Funny enough, I didn't know that it was Frank Sinatra at all. You know, it took me until I came back to the States and I went into the internet, didn't have like a smartphone or internet and places where you can easily access to it. So it took me all the way when I came back from my trip and I typed some of the lyrics, you know, some of the words in the song that I could remember. And I did research to what the fuck the song was. And I immediately after download the song. And I only put it on special circumstances when I'm feeling sad and depressed, when I feel that the life is hard, you know, and it's like, you know, why is it so hard to gain something small? And I kind of put it in there to kind of remind me. I fought with my own nails. I left tears, blood, sweat, and everything you want into this dream. So when I started thinking about it, I started going like, well, maybe it was a divine intervention trying to tell me something. I didn't have a radio. I never saw a radio in the room. So I was like, where's this song is coming from? So I started going like, is that you, God, sending me like this message or something? And then so I started thinking about like, wow, this is very weird situation. So after the song ended and I felt like more cheerful, I started looking within the room to see where that music it was coming from. So it took me a while to figure out that the music was coming from one of those old radios that it was in the room, but I didn't notice before that it was a radio because it was from like one of those 40s and 50s radios that it was some kind of like a furniture, like a bureau that it was cover that you actually have to open the, what do you call it, the lid, that, you know, to access the radio, and it had like a turntable and everything. But I didn't notice that it was like an actual radio, because I never opened it and I never done anything. And that was my first night in the hotel. So the radio was there, and that's what the radio was playing. But then I started thinking, wait, I didn't turn out the radio, because I didn't know that the radio was there. So I started going, like, you know, going crazy about, like, what happened? You know, I have two different theories. One of them is that, yes, divine intervention. But the second one, the more logical one, because I am a science person, that I think it really happened, is that the radio was programmed, kind of like an alarm clock, that the radio was programmed to turn on at certain time. Now, I didn't check the time of that time when that happened. I know it was after dinner. I know it was around 7 or 8 p.m. or 9, so I don't know who in the world will put a alarm clock around 8 or 9 p.m. Beats me about having that actual song playing when I really needed it. Who knows? So that's why I always gonna have that song in my heart. And that's why it angers me. Like, it makes me furious that this person, Donald Trump, actually loved this song. And I'm pretty sure that he's gonna be like, oh, well, I did it my way too. Well, no, you didn't. You're buddy. You used your daddy's money. So that's kind of like my song.
Well, again, you're taking it back. I don't think that song is going to be super applicable once he goes to prison, so.
Yeah. Well, maybe he will get out by itself, and he did it his way. Yeah. Did a Frank Sinatra wrote actually the song?
No.
Or it was Paul Anka. Okay, so the lyrics were written by Paul Anka.
You know Paul Anka, don't you?
From general culture, not from actually, I never
listened to it. Well, and don't forget Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, that's what I say, general culture.
So, you know, we're both fans of Gilmore Girls, and their dog was named Paul Anka.
Hey, you.
Okay, so, weird dream. Weird, weird dream. Well, I was home, and I was finishing up my usual morning routine, you know, coffee, shower, and then, picture this, very weird, I take Paul Anka for a walk.
You walk Paul Anka every day. What's weird about that?
Not the dog Paul Anka, the real Paul Anka.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Was he nice?
Very pleasant, natty dresser. Then suddenly, he sees something, a cat or something, and darts right into the middle of the street.
The real Paul Anka?
The dog Paul Anka. So, I call him and call him, but he completely ignores me and runs right into Dozy's Market. So I go after him into Dozy's, and apparently he's got a job there.
The dog Paul Anka?
The real Paul Anka.
You picked yourself some beautiful cucumbers, Mrs. Clancy. You have the cucumber eye.
Yeah, and then they met in the middle of the street, and it was like a chaos. Kind of like the, boom, the end of the world, because it was like one of those paradox.
Paradox, okay.
So this song, popularized by Frank Sinatra in 1969, but it was written by Paul Anka, and set the music of the French song, Comment de la Beauté. Funny, though, is that I didn't know that Elvis Presley played that song as well.
Yeah, there was a Twitter thing going around amongst a number of my friends where he was named your favorite Bob Dylan song, Elvis song, Beatles song, and Rolling Stones song. And Paquita could only manage to pull up two of those because she doesn't like the Beatles and she doesn't like Elvis. But I made a point of mentioning to her, well, you could always do My Way. Elvis did My Way.
My Way is yes about the song, but it's also about Frank Sinatra, because Frank Sinatra was singing it in the hotel room. So.
Well, and that's the most iconic performance, and you actually like Frank Sinatra. You could probably rattle off a few more of his songs you liked if you wanted to. What was his peak chart position on the Billboard?
In Canada was the 28th place. Adult Contemporary was the second. And the UK was the 5th. US Billboard Hot 100 was 27th.
Yeah, but this is Frank Sinatra charting at 27 and 69. So that's kind of a big deal. The kids weren't exactly tuning in to Frank Sinatra, but the song was strong enough to carry him.
One of the things that will make me feel better about liking this song, even though Donald Trump likes it too, is because I can actually say that a Mexican woman, not speaking English perfectly, actually owns that song better. And I can say, hey, this is my song, and this is actually has more meaning to me. I'm a Mexican. That's my song, Ish. I hope you enjoyed it.
Coming up next, Fortunate Son from CCR.
In your face, all over the place.
We're online 24/7. 24/7.
You're listening to the hottest internet station.
One Song Each is a Roll Spine podcast. Any resemblance to an actual commercial endeavors is purely incidental. This is all in good fun with no money changing hands. No copyright infringement is intended with this fair use free show to the public. Drop us a line on our webpage or social media if you would like to participate in future episodes. Thank you for listening.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats crying are ready to die. We've lost most all of our happy people, and I'm wondering why. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.